What's up, internet friends, and welcome to another episode of the PlayStation Plus Game Club. I'm your host, Kevin Garaventa, aka the Portland Kevin, and this is a show where we pick one game from the PlayStation Plus library and break it down for your entertainment, information, and amusement. Today, we are talking about The Gardens Between. Developed and published by the Voxel Agents out of Australia in September of 2018, this is a short and very unique puzzle story game where you control the flow of time as two people walk through the memories of their friendship. And joining me today is a good friend of my own, Jordan Vickers. It's great to have you back.
Hey, it's always great to be back. This was almost a second attempt at this game. The first one was an impromptu of my guest might not show up. I think we talked about this once the last time I was on. Because you offered me two games and I went, let's go with this one. Never heard about it, never played about it. And the normal episode went on, so we're doing this now.
Yeah, this was one that I recommended and you started playing. I ended up having another guest sub in and show up, but we were like, you know, let's put this one on the back burner, and because we should talk about it at some point. And now we are. So I'm really glad to finally get the chance to do it. So this is going to be a fun one. But before we start talking about The Gardens Between, you've got a couple of updates for us about your own projects that are going on.
Yeah. So for those that remember, I tried to attempt a podcast, only got one episode out. It was horribly edited. Then we tried two more episodes, two of those episodes, one with you, Kevin, and Maximus. That was the Sonic one. And then another one about Mario Kart 8. That was with Josh from the PlayStation Trophy podcast. Unfortunately, they were both corrupted, and now they got even more corrupted. So, yeah. I wake up one day, and like, I knew I needed to get a new computer, but then like, computer just didn't work at all. Followed by a monitor and my stove, and I went, okay, something went off. And then I found out something happened like to the entire condo complex. Maybe lightning got struck on a power line or something. Yeah. A lot of people's shit got fried.
Yikes.
So I have two hard drives. One's like the fancy SSD. Unfortunately, that's not the one that I stored everything in. The other one, which is a bit more old-fashioned, got fried. Like, nothing is fucking usable. And I had to replace I was able to save that SSD, but it's an entirely new computer. So I'm now restarting the podcast. That's the finish game review, where I take a game that is fully done, there are no more updates coming out, DLCs all done, and we give it one last review.
Yeah.
And starting next month, I'm hoping to do that again, although I'm looking for participants. And I would like you back on.
Oh, I'd love to be back.
Maybe we can retry Sonic again.
Yeah.
We'll see. I also want Josh back on, not just for Mario Kart 8, but I kind of want to get you and him, because he's talked about a game I want to do really badly that I discovered last year, and that's Marvel's Midnight Suns.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I really want to do this game because, like, I played it last year. It was available for the PlayStation Plus subscription. Now it no longer is. So we can't talk about it on your show, sadly. Yeah. But it blew me away. Okay. I was like, this is kind of the perfect Marvel game.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to do that. The other announcement I have, I'm also doing another podcast, but this one's much smaller. I think I'm going to call it Old Saved Game. And it's so hard to find a name for like any gaming podcast nowadays because they're already taken.
Right.
But yeah. This one is all about gaming memories.
Yeah.
And not so much a review on the game, but like what life was like and what you specifically remember, maybe even outside the game itself, doing when you were like really focused on a certain game. I kind of want to start it off with a true classic, Mario Kart 64.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the first memory I have of playing something with four people together at once. And
exactly.
That was one of those moments that I think was like, I can't believe I'm doing this right now. As a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old at the time, I was thinking to myself, like, this is actually happening. I can't believe it. You know, it might be my best friend's younger brother, who's only 6, and his dad that are playing with us. But still, this is amazing.
Yeah, like the N64 was just kind of mind blowing, because 4-player things usually were at the arcade at the time.
Yeah.
And then like the N64 comes along with that and GoldenEye, and so many people our age have like an affinity for that era. And, you know, my penultimate episode, I would love to talk about just Ocarina of Time sometime.
Oh, yeah. Well, so. Yeah, that would be a completely like different story from me as well. But yeah, that would be great. So I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, I can't wait to see what you do next as far as that goes. I have a couple of games in mind that I would suggest to you that we should definitely talk about.
And one of the best things, I love this idea on the production side. It's a game you don't have to play again.
Yeah.
You don't have to hunt it down. I'm looking for your memories. Mm-hmm. If you want to like replay some of it, but that's fine. But don't like, oh, I have to play this game I haven't picked up in 20 years, man.
Yeah.
Like, if you remember enough of it, talk about it.
Yeah. So, The Gardens Between is one that was recommended to me by Daryl way back earlier this year. He was on the show for our Super Liminal episode, and he was talking about puzzle games. And this one, it piqued my interest because it's a puzzle game that, first of all, isn't particularly hard, and also has some really interesting mechanics to it, where you would think that like, oh, it's going to have you working through problems and trying to figure out how to like move things around and tinker with things and do all this weird stuff. And really, you're not intended to get particularly stuck anywhere or get stumped by anything. You're just intended to work through this thing. And it's like a simple experience that takes a few hours. So I feel like it is a very much like a light puzzle game in a sense, where you don't have to think that hard about a lot of this. And I don't know if that's because I already played through it once earlier this year, and then playing through it again this last week, I just breezed through it because I remembered so much from it. But there is a lot here that you can just kind of easily walk through. And it's more of an experience than a puzzle game. What do you think?
I would consider this to be more of a weird museum art piece that has interactive puzzle elements to it.
Yeah.
There's something really interesting about this game, because it is by far something I would never have picked up. I think this show in particular champions games like this because it's only a 3-hour experience, the very most,
yeah,
but it's so vastly different from what I normally play. It felt like a very nice breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
While at the same time you're like thinking, I think you kind of have to be an asshole to not enjoy this game.
You have to, like, you know, just be a jerk to not see what this is trying to do.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
But yeah, like, this game is so cozy and comfy, and it's kind of a nice delight, both visually and what it's doing. It's also something that I kind of wish, I don't know, I had like a kid around to show certain parts of this.
Yeah.
Because it almost felt like a children's museum piece in a weird way.
Sort of.
If that makes it.
Because like to give anyone who's listening an idea of what this game is like that hasn't played it, first of all, like, you could pause this podcast, go download The Gardens Between and play like the first 15, 20, 30 minutes of it and come back and have a great idea of what we're talking about. But you could also just play through the whole thing and then come back to this podcast. However, that's not to say that like this is sort of like a spoiler cast. Like, we're not going to spoil a lot of the puzzles in it, but we'll talk about a lot of them. And it is a very simple game in that you control the flow of time as two characters walk around a small island that it's just like a rocky island in the middle of a body of water. And they are walking around on this island that is peppered with objects that relate to the memories that they have together. And you don't control what they're doing. You just control the point in time that they are walking around and interacting with things. You can pause and not have them move at a certain point, and they can, you can push a button and they will actually do something. They will either the two characters, Arena, who carries a lantern, she could either set that lantern down or pick it up. And then there's Frent, her best friend, who can ring bells or some sort of like bell-like object in the game. And that will allow you to change things or control other things while they're just still standing still. So there are these puzzle elements to it, but really, like, there's not too much for you to get stuck on. There aren't very many dead ends. You just have to, you know, cozy up to it and think a bit about what you're doing. And you sit back and just watch them walk around this island and walk through their memories in a sense. So it's hard to describe, I guess, but it's a very dreamlike kind of set piece and environment that they're walking through every time you jump into this.
Yeah, you kind of made the controls seem more complicated than they are.
Yeah, because they're really, it's really just forward and back and then interact. That's it.
Yeah, you literally press left, and every time they go left, the time kind of reverses.
Yeah.
And it stops whenever you let go of the button, and then it goes forward whenever you press right. And there's literally certain points where you can interact with stuff, and it makes it super obvious when the boy can like just press a button on the map and it interacts.
Yeah.
What makes this really unique, and you kind of don't see it until a few levels, like the first few levels are super easy. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a little bit stumped until like the third level of the game. I think that was the one with the Atari.
Yeah.
In it.
Yeah.
I think that's the first time it really challenged me a little bit, going, oh, okay, there's more to this game than I thought. So you're going forward in time and backward in time, and it seems like there are little bits to do. There, each stage is cut into segments, and you'll never get stuck. It might seem like you get stuck at points, but if you just pay attention, and you'll go, "Oh, I didn't soft lock myself in an area. There's something I need to do in this area." Sometimes it's super obvious. Sometimes it'll take you a couple of minutes, but trial and error is a little bit of the game.
Oh, yeah. That simplicity really just allows people to sit in the experience of what's going on and sort of interpret the story for themselves for what they're seeing. Because the end of every chapter has, you know, two or three different set pieces that you've walked through. And at the end of every chapter, it just compiles all of the objects that you've seen there into one scene that is a particular memory that these two have together. And that would be like them hanging out in the backyard during a summer day, and they were playing with the hose in the waiting pool, or they were playing on the playing video games on the couch all night. And it's a particular moment when Arena threw a popcorn kernel at Frent and hit him in the head with it. And it's just, it's a very specific moment out of these memories that they have. And you kind of have that with every chapter, and it's a very heartwarming thing to see, but you don't really understand why you're like looking through these memories, and there's not really an explanation for that throughout the whole game, but you kind of just have this sense that, you know, they're not together anymore, and these memories are just all that they have of each other. So playing through it again this time, I felt like I can really relate to this and how this game is making me think about my own friendships, where, you know, I'm sure we both got friends that we don't really talk to that much anymore, just because of like time, circumstance, whatever has just like pulled us apart. But there are still objects that I have around the house that I keep that remind me of that person. And that's what I feel like this game is kind of putting on display, where objects themselves that we have personally remind us of somebody and the friendship that we had. And that's what's really heartwarming about this, that makes it feel more like a museum art piece, as you said.
Yeah. Well, the other part of the museum art piece is just, I would say, how creative the mm-hmm. puzzles are. It's a great example is like near the end of the game, there is a puzzle where if you keep moving forward, a water drop just goes into a big puddle of water. But through it, at some point, it has to go through a wire that is cut in half, and what you're supposed to do is go back and forth and stop where that water just stops right between the wires, and the current will build up and it will turn on these lights.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't think about it until a moment and you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That water droplet. And it's a really cool way to interact with time.
Yeah. Because you're not necessarily like moving time backward or forward. You just need to pause it at the right moment when that water droplet has dropped just between the two cut wires to make them connect again. And that turns the lights on, which then, you know, clears the fog that is trapping you or like stopping you from progressing. So I thought that was a really cool moment. That is like an example of the puzzle sort of element to it, where you have to just find the right thing that will trigger your progress to the next set piece. We're kind of like diving into some of our more memorable and favorite set pieces. Do you have any others that you want to mention?
Well, going back to the video game level, how to turn on the game and get that weird character to jump out of the TV.
Yeah.
Was a weird, mind-blowing experience. I would say mechanically, this kind of breaks down into two, maybe three parts. You are supposed to not just get to the end of the level. You're supposed to bring a light with you to the end of the level as well.
Yeah. So the lantern. Yeah. Well, the lantern that Arena holds it's like this magic lantern that can pick up orbs of light. And those orbs of light are almost always coming out of a flower bud that is somewhere in the level. And you have to figure out how to get that lantern close enough to the flower bud to pick up the light and then bring that to the gateway that will take you to the next set piece. And, you know, sometimes there are gaps in the walkway that need to be filled in using an orb light, and then you need to find a way to pick up another one somewhere in the level. Or, you know, there's going to be like black orbs that will absorb the light, and you need to find a way to get around that black orb. Or sometimes it's necessary for you to actually get rid of your light, so then you can walk on the fog if the fog were a wall in front of you, you wouldn't be able to progress. But because the fog is covering a gap in the floor, you can walk across it, as long as you don't have a light in the lantern that will erase the fog. That's where the puzzling kind of gets a little bit more complicated, but it's never going to outright push you back or like stop you directly from progressing. It's just going to like hold you up and say, hold on, you haven't figured this out quite yet. You can reverse time and go back and find a way to get that light or get rid of your light to then continue forward. And that's where, like, you kind of mentioned that, like, this game doesn't really try to stump you. It just says that, hey, you haven't gotten there yet. So turn around, reverse time, and figure it out. Before we move on from like some of our favorites, like another one, you mentioned that like there's this weird character that comes out of the TV. He's one of the like the jumping cubes that you can put your lantern on, and then he'll carry your lantern around. There is one particular level that is in the treehouse section, and the treehouse memory is a really cool one. I love all three of those levels that are in it, but one of my favorites was the first time they introduce a bunch of these different jumping cubes, and you have to watch carefully as you rotate the set piece, the island. You have to watch all of these jump around and look for the right one that will jump near the flower, and then have Arena put the lantern on that right one and like reverse time and have it jump back down. And there are like 10 of these jumping cubes that jump around the paint buckets. And so you have to like watch what paint bucket they jump in, because they change color, and then they leave a certain color of paint or like around the island. And now like you have to like very carefully watch this shell game, in a sense of like which cube is the one that I need. And, you know, if you get it wrong, you just reverse time and see that like, oh, the cube that I put it on is not going to jump near the flower. So let's go back up to the top and like move the lantern to another cube, try again. Okay, we'll figure it out. So the game doesn't punish you for getting something wrong, which is another nice thing. It just says, no, try again. It's okay.
Yeah. This game reminds me of, like, Observation is kind of the name of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me of a very, very, very easy version of The Witness in that regard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because, like, it has that aha, I get what you're telling me to do moment.
Mm-hmm.
If you do have a kid that loves this game and they like want a harder challenge, throw them in The Witness, and then they'll be screaming their hair out for about 5 minutes. But
it's funny because I love The Witness, but yeah, I get it. Yeah. Yeah. You know, we also haven't touched on kind of like the music, because the music really is, and the sound design also is very much like a particular style, and throws almost another spin to what you're seeing and what you're hearing in this game, because it's a very chill and cozy kind of soundtrack. And it's something that definitely fits within the rest of it. So there were times where I just like sit back and like let the music play for a minute or two and not move forward, because it was just relaxing and I liked it.
Yeah, I would call it more an ambience type of music. It's very background noise, but it fits in just kind of perfectly. I wouldn't say it'd be something you'd put on your Spotify list by any means.
No.
But it's made specifically for the game, I would say.
It's some good music to work to. Also, the sound design itself has some interesting things. I don't know if I noticed it the first time I played it, but this time, this is really interesting, where as you're playing, at some angles, you'll be able to see there is a window in the background of the whatever island you're playing with. And it's just this floating window up in the sky. You know, it is just sitting there in the air. And like we said, like, it is a very dreamlike kind of environment that Arena and Frent are walking through, where there are giant versions of these objects that they're walking around. Like, there's a giant number pad that they can walk across, and that enters various numbers in a password system. Or
I was going to say the calculator is one of my favorite puzzles.
But what I wanted to mention was that I noticed this window at one point just up there in the sky. And if you rotate the camera around and you're able to just stop time while the window is supposed to be behind you or behind the camera, that means it's like the closest to you as a viewer. You can hear voices talking in that window, and you can't make out what they're saying, but it is a conversation that sounds like adults are having. And that gives me the sense that, like, these are kids that were friends, and, you know, that they were friends as young kids, and now, like, their parents have made decisions that affect their own friendship, and they weren't really paying attention to what the adults were saying, but they did have that become part of their own memories. And so when you think back about childhood memories, you would remember, like, you know, your adults around you having conversations, but you don't remember what it was they were saying, but you can get the general tone of what they were saying just by how the conversation sounds like it's going.
I didn't notice that at all, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah.
No. I was too focused on everything else, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah. No, it was just a weird thing that I noticed one night, a few nights ago, and I was like, I should mention this because it's really cool. So that little things like that that go into the design of this game are very effective. You brought up the calculator puzzle. Like, that particular set piece is really cool because I loved it because you have Arena or Friend walk across the number pad, and there's a certain password that you're looking for that they have to step on certain numbers a couple of times. And so you have to reverse time back and forth to get them to repeat some of the numbers. What did you love about it?
Well, it took me a while. But, like, I think it's one of the trickiest puzzles in the game, because it is like, wait, he needs to go back, but then she needs to go forward, and then he needs to go forward twice. And then if you mess it up, you got to start all over, which is a little bit of a pain. But in retrospect, it's like, that's really cool.
Yeah.
There was also something about another password in that same level. You got to look in the background for it. Mm-hmm. The way things connected in that level. I don't think we mentioned, like, we did mention that everything in this game is very dreamlike, but in the way of, you're tiny, everything else is big. Like, your modern day objects, everything is huge.
Yeah. Early on, there's a VCR that Frent then, like, pushes a button on, and if you stop time, he'll hold his hand up against that button, and the VCR will continue rewinding the tape that's in there. And as soon as it finishes rewinding, it'll just spit the tape out. And this giant cassette tape is now a bridge that you can use to walk across the gap.
I think that was the first puzzle I had that really said, the environments are not what you think. Or this is how you interact with your environments, I should say.
Yeah. Also the idea that, like, you know, you can pause time, but because you're pausing time, that will have an effect on the environment itself if you pause it at the right moment.
Yeah, and that's a lesson you need to remember very well, especially at the later stages.
Yeah.
Because they like to pull a lot of those.
Well, that's the same principle going back to the water droplet. Like, if you pause time at the right moment, the electricity will go through the wires and turn the lights on.
Did you have any puzzles that made you go, I don't like that one?
You know, I don't think so. There were some that were just kind of like, you know what, this is kind of annoying, but
yeah.
Then afterwards I was like, you know, I get what they're doing. That was a really interesting thing to puzzle through. One that I really noticed I got that feeling with was the storm drain, where there's this giant pit that water is flowing into.
Are you going to talk about the cans?
Yeah. And so like in this time, the set piece is not a giant island. It is a ring with a giant pit where the water is flowing in. And you have to figure out what is the exact time that I need the giant soda cans to float by for either Arena or Friend to walk over. And that was just one where it's like, man, hold on, I didn't get it just right. No, wait, hold on. I need it to be a little bit before it floats by, or I need to be a little bit after because I'm reversing time now. So it is very, you have to be a little bit more precise than I wanted. And it just made me think a lot more about, you know, when exactly am I going to have them float by, or what particular objects do I need to float by? Because like one of these objects has a fog wall on it, so I can't walk through it without a lantern, or one of these objects actually just is fog, and so you can't walk over it with a lit lantern, so you need to find a way to get rid of the light or get rid of the lantern. And there's a lot more to think about than just, you know, time it right so they walk across these floating objects.
Yeah, that was a puzzle where, like, being a veteran gamer kind of fucked me over.
Oh, no.
I'm like, oh, I know what to do. And the problem I had was I was going way too soon.
Yeah.
Like, I think you're really supposed to wait for the second can the first time around and then go a little backtrack. And I was like, no, first can, then you go with the other first can.
Yeah.
And that's not the solution. And I was just getting super frustrated. But once when I figured it out, the next puzzle, which is similar after that, I got really quickly like, mm-hmm. I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the one that really made me kind of mad was near the end. It's one of the few ones where perspective is part of the game, and they're looking at a telescope, and you're supposed to make this light in the sky go like turn into a ball, and you're supposed to figure out when to catch the ball.
Yeah.
And I was like, that took me a long time to figure out what pinpoint. Do I stop time? Do I make this thing rotate? And then where do I meet it in the middle?
Yeah. Yeah. Because you kind of have to figure out, okay, well, where can I get it the lowest? So then I can have Arena like carry the lantern close enough to it. And yeah, that was one of the frustrating ones where I was just like, you know what, let's just get the moon as low as we can. And we'll see where Arena can get to see if this can turn around. And yeah, like I did get it eventually, but that took me a couple of tries. And also, like, because it's the first time that you need to use perspective, and I think it's the only time that you need to use perspective in the game.
I think it's, yeah.
It was one of those where I was like, maybe this will work, but I have no reason to think it will. It's just like, you know, I should try this. And that's kind of the mentality that you need to have throughout the whole game, where you just need to say, what if I try this? Is this going to do anything? And that's the perspective that you need to take to really solve a lot of these pretty simple puzzles. It's just a case of, you know, not knowing what really works and experimenting around with stuff. One of my favorites also that we haven't mentioned is the dinosaur skeleton that is just this giant dinosaur that is sitting on
it keeps falling down and Yeah. I forgot about that one, but
yeah, that one was really cool. I just like that because you have to control exactly when it starts to crumble, and depending on the state of that crumble will make certain pathways using the bones. I liked how that forced you to think about the time, like the timing for their walking in two different like perspectives. So, you know, you have them walk around the island, and then at one point friend can stop in front of the bell and ring it, and that will pause time, but then that allows you to control the crumbling state of the skeleton. And so you need a couple of bones to fall so that it makes a bridge, but not too many of them so that they get their pathway blocked. And then you need to also like control, like, okay, well, what direction are they going to be facing? And, you know, where's the flower that you need to use to pick up the light? So it starts throwing a few more elements at you to really think about what you're doing.
Yeah. I can't fully remember the details. I do remember there was one where I couldn't find the stupid flower for the life of me.
Oh, no.
I can't remember anything else about that puzzle except, oh, there it is. And now I can figure out what to do.
Yeah.
I do think probably the coolest one and my final puzzle to talk about is the one where there's like sidewalk chalk showing you the level itself, and there is a box bouncing around on it.
Yeah.
The way with that one interacted with the level, I was like, okay, that's really neat. That's funny.
The playground level, because the pictures that were drawn using the chalk has the jumping cube jumping around them, and then you have to like make the cube on the pictures stop in a specific point to then affect the world that is on the rock. So that was neat. I loved that one. What did you think of the Walkman level?
A little annoying at the end when you get to the Walkman.
Yeah.
But once when you figure it out, you're like, I got it. And I figured out what to do very early on.
Yeah.
It was just like making the boxes jump around at the right timing. So like the dark one doesn't suck up the light ball.
Yeah.
That was annoying. Yeah. But I like the idea of it.
It's like, oh, this is cool because, like, you know, whatever channel is tuned that the Walkman is tuned to will, like, decide which cube is jumping around. And, you know, it is like that riddle that asks, like, if you have a bunch of sheep, some heads of lettuce, and a wolf, like, which, like, what do you cart across the river? Like, how do you get all three of them across the river at once? I forget if it was, like, sheep, wolf, and lettuce, or if there were chickens involved somewhere, but you know, that
never
was a,
heard of that.
it was like, it reminded me of this logic puzzle that you have to think about where it's like, okay, well, I need the lantern with the light to go here. But if it goes there on its way to where I need it to be, it's going to have its light sucked out by the black orb. And this like antimatter orb is in the way. So I have to change the channel on the Walkman to make that cube dance that is carrying the antimatter orb. And that cube will jump to another place out of the way. And then my lantern cube can jump over there and then jump to me. And you have to just use Frent and how he's tuning the Walkman back and forth in time to govern like which cube is jumping at what time. That really made me think, okay, I need to time this just right so that, you know, this cube doesn't have an extra jump and I end up accidentally putting the two together. And, you know, now the lantern is too close to the antimatter orb and, you know, now I have to start over.
But I think that's the only puzzle where reflex is a thing, if I remember right.
Yeah, and even then your timing is very forgiving, so you just have to be paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the final climb in the final chapter, I thought was really, really cool. But it does introduce a new element and its own puzzle element to figure out, where they're climbing this giant spire of rock and there's a storm happening around them, and there are lightning strikes that will occasionally hit the rocks that are in their way and explode the rocks and make a pathway for them. But you have to figure out that if you pause time at the right time, the lightning strike will be up in the air, and then it will reach out to other objects in the environment and create a new pathway for you. I thought that was neat, but I remember the first time I played this, that's the only puzzle that really stumped me, because I didn't notice that the lightning was actually reaching.
Oh, yeah. I figured it had to do something with the lightning. I can't remember how long it took me to figure out, oh, it'll just connect to the scissors, which is the first one on its own. But then you get to the second part of it, which is immediately when I saw the TV, I was like, okay, I know exactly what to do, but it's just the amount of lining up stuff in its correct position. And it gives you a telltale. What you're supposed to do the second time around is turn on a TV with lightning, and it has a cord attached to it, and you're trying to make the put the TV in a specific position where the lightning strike will hit the end of the cord and turn on the TV.
Yeah.
And it'll give you a little bit of a tell when you put it in the right spot, because it'll spark on its own a little. Okay, thanks for, because otherwise you might be doing trial and error way too much at that point.
Yeah, this one, it took me the first time I played it, and I'm trying to remember, like, how long did it really take me? But it took me a good while, way back earlier this year. But this time I immediately remembered, oh yeah, this is the lightning. This is the hard one that I got stuck on. But,
Oh, go ahead. I was going to ask another question.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, because I do want to talk about the end of the game. The actual ending.
That's actually what I was going to allude to, because it's funny you brought up the final puzzle area, because the first two stages out of that three, I have to ask you, were you a little bit scared that one of these kids was going to die?
No, I was concerned, but I felt like this was going to be, like, I didn't get anything sinister from this. So I wasn't that afraid of this, but I could see how you'd start to think about that.
Well, the reason I start to think about it, so like one of the few scenes before this is the storm drain one, which kind of ends in a peculiar position where they're trying to reach for one of the characters' letter jackets. Yeah. And I'm like, well, I could see 1,000 ways where that could go wrong. But then you get to the final part and it's a lightning storm, and going back to the music, it's the only time the music's a little daunting, like ominous, like something bad is going to happen. And then you get to the last stage and the music's fine. Mm-hmm. It's cheerful and there are no puzzles whatsoever.
Yeah.
Which is a little weird, but then it was like, it felt like a congratulations. You made it. You did the game.
Yeah.
Here's just enjoy the scenery along the way.
Yeah.
But those first two stages made me go, I'm afraid one of these kids are about to die or something. What the hell?
A little creepy, but like, yeah, that last stage in the final chapter is more like a victory lap. Like, just say hey, like, you made it. Here's the end. After you reach the very top and insert the lantern into the gateway for the both of them to walk through, you get a scene that shows the two of them hugging and then Frent walking to a moving truck. And they are best friends that have lived close enough to each other. And that's what all their scenes are about. That's what the gardens between are, is the gardens between their two houses. Frent is moving away. And, you know, you just see that, like, his parents have probably sold their house because there's a sold sign outside of it. But they've sold the house and he's moving somewhere else. You know, unfortunately, their friendship is ending, at least the way they know it. You know, it really just puts sort of a somber end cap to what all of these memories are. But it also reveals that really, like, what the relationship is between the two of them and why we are walking through this dreamlike state of their memories rather than just having the two of them be together.
Yeah. If you open up the game and you just see the new game continue screen, you can see clearly their house. Mm-hmm. One's on the left, one's on the right. And it has a bunch of fun details. Like, you can see, I keep forgetting their names because I'm surprised you even know their names.
I wrote them down. They don't even. I wrote them down and they're in my notes here. So that's why I can keep repeating them.
Okay. But, like, the boy's window is open with a table outside so he can just step out whenever he wants. And the girl has to climb down a rope made out of sheets in order to get from her second story room. And in between is a treehouse, and it's a shabby treehouse, but it's also kind of neat. And it's probably like one of the 10 trees out of the city, wherever they're at.
Yeah.
Because if you look around, you're like, oh, these guys, they don't live in the best spot. There's a lot of just details. There's literally a train not too far from them. And if you ever lived by a train in your life, you know how fucking annoying that is.
Specifically an elevated, specifically the elevated train that tends to travel around large cities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is clearly a lesser well-known neighborhood. Boy's parents clearly wanted to GTFO out of there whenever they could. But it did come as a gut punch when you're like, you see them hugging and it pulls out and you see, I immediately saw the sold sign in the car full of crap on top of it and went, oh
yeah,
man, that's a bummer. Mm-hmm. So you're like, yeah, guy's moving and there's nothing you could do. But like, yeah, the gardens between literally is just that little magical place between their house.
Yeah.
And I thought that was just a really cool touch.
Mm-hmm. It is a very somber but heartfelt ending to this story that you kind of just, in a sense, because there's no narration, there's no dialogue in this game, you kind of just have to fill in the story yourself. And because that forces you to make it up in your head, I feel like it becomes a bit more personal when you do see things happening to these characters that are not in your control. And that hits a bit harder when it comes to understanding how their story's ending. That's a sad part for the whole game, but it really conveys that idea that this is an art piece that is just meant to be experienced and not a game that is supposed to trick you or make you think too hard. It is just something that the studio put out to convey a certain feeling and a certain story.
You said you looked up some stuff. I have to ask, did you find out if this is like basically the life story of one of the creators or something?
Oh,
this
I don't know.
Really personal.
I don't know, but it very well could be.
I was going to say, like, the more you play, the more you're like, this feels like somebody's life.
Yeah,
we're replaying right now.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. Yeah. Who who should check out The Gardens Between? Like, who is this game?
Okay. That's a great question, because, like, I would not have played this game unless if you called out to me and said, hey, I need an emergency podcast done. And I went, fine, let's pick this one. But I'm really glad I enjoyed it, because I would say this is, if you are in a weird slump in gaming right now that you really want to play something, well, you want something a little bit different. Just, you ever had one of those draws of like, I want to play something.
Yeah.
But nothing sounds appetizing right now. Also, go for this game.
If you feel like you want something that is not going to challenge you too much, and also that is going to be pretty quick, like it's a very quick experience that you can get done over the weekend. Like, you just want something relaxing, and something that is not a huge commitment. That's what this is.
Yeah. It's one of those, like, I'm stuck indoors all day sort of thing. I got nothing to do, and I don't want to start a whole new game and like not play it after this weekend's done, but I have just the weekend. That's a perfect time to play this game.
Yeah. Okay.
And I don't say this has a specific audience either.
Mm-hmm.
Except for, you know, people that just won't play Call of Duty all the time probably won't get much out of this game.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say this is probably a great game to play with kids,
mm-hmm.
and maybe to also have a small group of friends around you that, if they're open-minded people.
Okay. Yeah. I can definitely see myself recommending this to my 10-year-old niece. She would have fun with this. Thinking about that, what are some other chill, relaxing puzzle games that this, you know, particularly that The Gardens Between made you think of?
Well, I already mentioned The Witness, and I think that's kind of probably the best comparison that comes to mind. I did tell you this earlier. This game kind of seems like the evolution of one of the walking stories. I don't know why the name is like What Remains of Edith Finch.
Yeah, that's a good
one. Type of game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A game that is walking, not really,
simulators.
Yeah.
That's the word I was looking for.
But Edith Finch is a really good call out, because that game, like this one, is not trying to challenge you at all. It is trying to tell you a story. And it's very similar to what this game was doing. So that's a very good call out. This one especially reminded me of Flower, just in the style that it has, in the sense of relaxation that I get with playing it.
That is a name I haven't heard in a long time.
That's a deep, deep cut, and a very old game by today's standards, but still one of my favorites. I love that game. So,
yeah, that's actually a great comparison to this game.
Other games that represent like deeper meanings that you can think of?
Ooh, nothing really comes to mind. Mm-hmm. Do you have one?
So like there's one that this one reminded me of, where you really just have to interpret it in certain ways to really understand what this game could represent. And the one that I'm thinking of is called Expand. Expand is it's a really cheap game, very easy puzzle game, cool one that has a certain art style that you just kind of have to check out on YouTube to really understand. But you're just moving a block around through a maze, and the maze is circular in shape and changes its shape as you move around. But it is just about a block trying to get to the very center of the screen. That's all you're trying to do. And the maze itself is just constantly moving and shifting, and it turns into like this other sort of message that you can kind of gather from just how the game plays out. So I recommend checking out Expand. It's a very artistic and interpretive kind of game, similar to this.
You telling me of a block just moving around reminds me of Thomas Was Alone.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a very good one. Yeah. Thomas Was Alone. Yeah.
If you want to get some really crazy, I can't remember the name of the mod, but there's this Doom mod of all things. Totally different vibe.
Doom? Okay.
But what, have you ever heard of this book called House of the Leaves?
House of Leaves is an amazing book. I loved it.
Someone made a Doom mod based on that.
Oh my God. Okay.
And if you YouTube it, if you YouTube House of Leaves Doom mod, I'm sure you can find the video. It is a big deep dive into this Doom mod. And I went, wow, someone went really deep on a Doom mod.
That is amazing. I'm doing that right after we record. That is, wow, I can't wait. I loved House of Leaves so much. Like, that is a book recommendation that I have for anybody listening. House of Leaves, because I loved it so much that I even thought to myself, if I were to pitch a movie, this is how I would do it. There is one specific way that you can do it that would be really good. And I don't feel like it would be done well any other way. I'm not going to spoil like what the book is about. Go check it out if you can. Moving on to other recommendations, you threw in one here, like DLC and filler notes.
Okay.
We've talked about a lot of games between the two of us. I've had you on the show a lot. We've talked about a lot of games. There are a lot of games that we've talked about that have had DLC updates for them. So did you want to recommend certain ones?
So I got four that I just want to talk about really quickly.
Yeah.
Dead Cells, it's not so much a buy DLC, although it came out with a final patch. And I know that some new weapons were added, and I think that's about it, and some bugs. But Dead Cells is finally finished, complete. They are moving on to the next project. I'm so happy for them.
Yeah.
Do you have any thought? You said you played the final bit, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I got all of the DLC for Dead Cells, and I played through all of it as much as I could. I could not finish the harder difficulties of the actual game, and also couldn't finish the harder difficulty of the last DLC they released, which was the Castlevania one. But I still made it to the very end of all of the actual like levels that they have set up. I know that like if you finish them on the harder modes, then you get like extra stuff. And I didn't make it there. But the DLC that is still there, really cool. I have a love-hate relationship with roguelikes in general. So Dead Cells was one of those where it's like there were times where like I would say I love this game, and other times where I'd say I hate this game. because there were so many times where I'd get so far, I'd get in like a perfect build for my character and feel like it was on fire, and then just get fucked over by something in the environment or bad circumstances, whatever. But, you know, that's the nature of roguelikes.
Yeah. Moving on to the other one, we talked about Bloodstained a few months ago.
Yeah.
There are a few DLCs for that, but... Mm-hmm. The good news is you don't have to worry about them because they suck.
Oh, no.
what they tried to do, they tried to recreate Castlevania and Castlevania 2 in those engines.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work at all. The your character's super, super stiff, more stiff than they ever felt before. And the way that monsters move in that engine compared to how the stages are laid out, mm-hmm. is not fun. The monsters are way too overpowered, and I fucking mastered Castlevania 1 on the NES. This is harder than that, and it should not be.
No.
So I just thought I would let people know that if you were curious about those, you heard about it, don't play them.
Okay.
then we talked about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Shredder's Revenge.
Yeah.
This came out with two DLCs, and they're mostly just about characters. Karai, Usagi Yojimbo, Kekko Mundo, and Mona Lisa. Two of those are really overpowered. Two of those have just really big specials. And there's a mode where you're just on a single screen trying to wipe out enemies. There's a lot of stage hazards, and it's semi-roguelike, semi-not. It's not very deep at all.
Yeah.
It's a fun time if you ever wanted to jump back into Turtles. And then finally, Dredge.
Mm-hmm.
And when me and Kevin made our little Dredge podcast, the day after they came out with more DLC.
I couldn't believe it.
I know.
I was like, why? What is wrong with your marketing team, guys? Come on, just announce this, please.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe the timing because we didn't talk about it when we recorded. But yeah, I have not jumped into the Iron Rig yet.
The Iron Rig, in my opinion, is better than the Arctic one that they came out with. It's funnier, in my opinion.
Oh, okay.
What happens is an oil rig shows up, and you find out there's obvious shenanigans going on.
Of course.
And they've lost a lot of their supplies. You need to go get them. There's also a scientist there that's studying. And unlike the Arctic one, where you just circle around this new area, this one slowly infects the map entirely, with the exception of the Arctic Circle.
Okay.
What happens is it's a drilling rig for oil, and every time they drill, giant spots of oil show up on the map, and you have to go clean it up and get certain things, and more things are happening. And I won't spoil how it ends, but it's really, really cool.
Okay. Okay. Cleaning up capitalism's mess again. All right. I love
it. Yeah. I actually very much enjoyed that one.
Okay.
So go check it out. Those are my four quick notes on DLC of previous games we've talked about.
Nice. Okay. Okay. Anything else you're reading, watching, or playing?
I finished Dave the Diver the other day.
Okay.
And they actually have Dredge DLC.
Yeah.
That was fun. Metaphor ReFantazio. Oh, have you been playing this?
No, but I know a bunch of people that have.
I now remember you're not the type for those games.
I'm not really that like a JRPG kind of person, but I do enjoy hearing about other people enjoying it.
You might want to hear about like a talk along cast, because it's a very fun game.
Yeah.
It's very deep and it's super pretty, but I'm about 10 hours in. I'm hardly in at all. I'm enjoying it.
Okay. Yeah.
Picked up Marvel Rivals today, and I don't know what they're thinking about bringing in Spider-Man when there are all these low ceilings all over the damn place. Like, God.
He can crawl on the ceiling.
Yeah. You got anything you've been playing?
So recently, I just finished Animal Well. So that was a really cool sort of Metroidvania kind of thing, but felt more like an open world than Metroid style kind of game. And I was going to, like, here's some behind the scenes stuff. So next month we were planning on talking about Metal Hellsinger. And then we found out that that's leaving PlayStation Plus. So I thought I'd just get that in really quick before it leaves. But yeah, we were going to be talking about that. And instead we are going to be talking about Curse to Golf next month. So that one's going to be, that's another roguelike where, you're playing two dimensional golf, around a randomly generated map. You know, I don't really like roguelikes, but we'll see where this one takes us.
I was playing Curse to Golf when it first came out, and I don't remember what stopped me. I should go back and finish it.
Okay.
But you talking about that remind me of the other game that I wanted to talk about real quick. Have you played UFO 50 yet?
Oh, no, no. I'm kind of waiting for it to come to PlayStation or Nintendo Switch.
But it is on Steam for now, but this is a game that's definitely going to make the console sooner or later, yeah, for sure. I am having a blast with these.
That's great. That's great.
For those that don't know what that is, it's a game with 50 games inside of it, and they're all basically as if they were made back in the late 80s. It's almost a little bit more to it to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, you have a company that developed games between two years or a specific set of time in the 80s, and then they went under. And this is a big collection of everything they made. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, not all games are for everyone on this collection, but every single game is competent.
Wow.
Like, okay, very well made. And I am shocked. Like, there's an old style NES horror game that is legit scary.
Awesome. Oh, man. Okay. Now I'm looking forward to playing it.
Yeah. Okay. I can't wait to hear your thoughts when you finally get your hands on it. I'm just in love with so many of these games.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Well, Jordan, I was in love with the Gardens Between. Thank you very much for suggesting we talk about it finally, because I really love talking about some of these smaller games that not many people know about. So, you know, it was great to talk with you about, you know, one of those games that I'm not sure if a lot of other people have played. And, you know, hopefully other people can hear this and check out the Gardens Between. They also check out Curse to Golf coming up. That's not going to really be my thing, but that's the idea. You know, this show gets people to check out stuff that they wouldn't really, you know, go after if we weren't talking about it. So, you know, that's the goal. And if you want to be part of that episode coming up about Curse to Golf, you can write in to psplusgameclub@gmail.com to share your thoughts about the game or recommend future games for future episodes. And you can find me on Discord at the Portland Kevin. You can find the PlayStation Plus Discord, the PlayStation Plus Game Club Discord, that is. And you can contact the show that way, and we'll try and read some of your thoughts about the game on the show. But Jordan, remind us what your projects are coming up and where people can find them.
Yeah, you'll be able to re-see finished game review coming back on Spotify, hopefully sometime in January, along with working title Old Game Save. Yeah. We'll see how that goes. I can't wait. And I do have one more other thing that I want to do next year. I want to stream making a tabletop RPG.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like I'll literally pull up a version of Microsoft Office and we're just going to write from beginning to end how to make, and I would like to publish, if I can, just a simple tabletop game.
Yeah.
And how the process through all that is. So more details on that one later. Mm-hmm. Let's get these two podcasts up and running first.
Very cool. Again, thank you for being here and for talking about the Gardens Between.
Oh, my pleasure, yeah, man. I always love being on the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll see you again next year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And everyone, thank you for listening. Hope you have a great day and have fun playing around. See you next year.
There are colors in the sky, and the ground is turning gray in the place where you and I used to play in the garden. And you're carried off downstream, but I know you'll think of me and all the things we used to be. said about me, I won't forget about you. And when you need me, we can go to places only we know. I won't forget.